Oh, there you go. That's a vibe. That is for sure a vibe.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin.
You are listening to episode 274 of Sapnin Podcast, featuring myself, Sean Smith, and my good friend, Morgan Richards.
Yes, it's me, Morgan Richards. And the excitement levels for this chat does not exist because he's too fetch to function.
That sounds like you're not interested in a guest.
It's complete opposite.
Yeah. This week's guest is Daniel Francese, comedian, actor, and all-round beautiful soul.
And he doesn't even go here.
Oh, another one. Yes.
Daniel Francese, I love your work. Look, before we get into it, I think I just need to take a moment here because I've made so many references and jokes and confessions about my love for the film Mean Girls.
Yes.
Throughout the inception of this podcast. And so the fact that we got to have this chat with Daniel meant a lot to me on so many levels, because I always felt like I need to justify how much I love this film to people sometimes because they think it's a joke or a misconception or whatever, but it's ultimately my number one comfort film. And the fact that we just got to dive into not only what it was like being in this picture in the 20th year anniversary, but it just his life and getting into comedy and his struggles with coming out with his sexuality and battling stereotypes of religion and just some incredible things he's done in his career was an absolute treat.
When we booked this in, I knew how insanely excited you were. And I didn't really know what to expect, to be honest. Don't get me wrong, I know the character from the film, but sadly I didn't know about his comedy and his nights he puts on in the comedy store in LA. So it was awesome to hear those stories and some of the people he's worked with. And he even gives my mother a shout out,
yeah,
which is quite nice.
Yeah, Jan gets a lot of love for all this, so you need to stay tuned to find out how and why. But yeah, honestly, like, again, this film means a lot to me, but the fact that we got to just get so many different layers of his life, and I think make him laugh and just talk about a lot of subjects I think, you know, you and me don't get to really talk about anyway. Yeah. And that's why it's always nice getting different guests on this podcast outside of the musical world, but still had such an influence on kind of alternative music culture. These quotes from his character are always everywhere. It's in some bands' lyrics and stuff all the time now. So yeah, it's a really, really nice touch. I'm thankful this just got to happen. But before we get into it, we should mention that we are currently recording this part of the podcast, this intro, the words you are currently hearing, in Glasgow, Scotland.
Yes, we are at SWG3, which is a venue in Glasgow, Scotland, as Americans say, wrong. And sitting next to us is James Richard Davis of The Blackout. Bob, say hello. there he is. Because The Blackout are currently on tour and we are in Glasgow. This is the second night of our tour.
Mm.
And roundabout 12 hours ago, none of us thought this would might. Well, we thought this might not be happening because last night we played in Manchester Academy, and it was an absolutely amazing gig. The people were fucking great. We were pretty good. And then two songs before the end, Gavin Mark Butler is claiming that I stood on his Achilles tendon. What?
He walked that back.
He haven't.
Yeah. He walked that back.
What? So I've been in my bunk all night going,
oh, you walked it back. No. So you were right to be guilty earlier because right. the guilt has only been rescinded since about 2 o'clock this afternoon.
What do you mean? Oh.
Well, when he came in earlier, he was like, I thought originally Sean jumped on me, but I don't think he did. I think I just heard it.
So
not my words, Sean. The words of Gavin Butler.
Well, what a prick. Because I spent all night going, it's taken me 7 months to try and prepare this, and I've ruined it by stepping on Gavin's tendon, and it just turns out it's Gavin can't walk.
Yeah, pretty much. Aww. I mean, from an outsider's perspective, I've loved all of it.
Yeah. Yeah, so at the end of our show yesterday, Gavin literally had to be helped upstairs and to our dressing room, and then we got a medic out who had a look at his foot and said he's probably torn his Achilles or the tendons in the back of his foot. And then we had to take him to a hospital in Manchester, where he stayed until this very morning when he was finally seen by the doctors, and they told him he's got a ruptured Achilles. So he's currently wearing a massive, massive boot for the shows. So, but last night was fucking fantastic. If you were at Manchester, thank you very much. If you came to Glasgow, which is in the future for us now, year, but when you hear this, it's in the past.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for coming. It was a good gig or a bad gig. You change that however you want, because you might have been there. So you decide. And then, yes, we've got Cardiff. And then when this goes out, we'll be Birmingham.
Mm-hmm. You're playing Birmingham tonight.
Birmingham tonight on the Friday that this comes out. Please come along. It's a massive venue. Please bring your tallest and widest friends so we can fill the space as best we can. And then Saturday, we play the Forum in Kentish Town, and it's going to be class.
Mm, and then Sunday, you and me get on a flight to Miami and go on a cruise.
Yes, so, we do. We go over the Bermuda Triangle, where we are bound to be abducted. Hey!
Shout out to Emo's Not Dead for that.
Yeah, but thank you very much.
Yeah, this I'm in Glasgow because it would make sense doing this conversation if I wasn't. But it's been nice doing Patreon meetups and stuff as well. And if you'd like to support this podcast in any way, please go and check out patreon.com/sapnin.
Go on, man.
There's been a lot. We've had a lot of extra people the last couple of days. I've noticed as well. So maybe.
Well, funnily enough, one of our patrons, Kylie Wheeler, she messaged me saying she met somebody on the train. She started talking to about it. And then they signed up.
Oh, they're recruiting others.
Yeah.
Come and join the cults. Come and join the cult. Yeah, it's growing. Man. Honestly, best way. And you get meet loads of new friends who go to future gigs and festivals together. And let us know that you're listening to this podcast at SapninPod on Instagram and the app formerly known as Twitter. Put it in your stories. We can share it and we can just share the love, everything going on. But without any further ado, it gives me great pleasure to say we are joined by Mr. Daniel Franzese of Mean Girls. Little advice. Don't have sex, you will get pregnant and die. Everyone grab a Johnny.
Sapnin!
Sapnin!
Tidy.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Sapnin!
Yes! All right!
Yes, we are in. It begins. Was that a little bit of trying to do one of our accents?
No.
Oh, okay.
It was me. I'm not that good at it. Everyone right now, it's like really popular. Everyone's like, gnar. And I'm like, I can't. I got to learn better.
Yeah. This week's guest is actor, comedian, and a cast member of Morgan's favorite film of all time. We are joined by the wonderful, the beautiful Daniel Franzese. How are you?
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. I am so happy to be here. I'm sappy to be here.
Ah!
You've just become my new favorite guest. Yes! I gotta write Sappy to be a dime. Sappy.
Make that merch now. We'll make that merch.
I will definitely invoice you.
That's fine.
Yeah, I was
that's
about
fine.
To say. Yeah, that's 20% of it is yours out of the gate. But yes, how are you? What's going on with you?
I just had LASIK eye surgery, so I'm still seeing poorly because it's a little bit of a recovery. But I'm very optimistic. You know, I had the surgery, and then we'll see.
Yeah.
Well, literally, we'll see.
Yes.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time during the recovery as well to speak to us. I mean, yeah,
yes.
I've tried to get this sorted when you were coming.
I know. I've been so excited to talk to you guys. Yes.
Yeah. And sadly, we couldn't do it when you were over here because schedules didn't line up. But like, yeah, you were over for DragCon. And I want to know, like, what are those conventions and like DragCon like for you? Because you're someone who has just been embraced so much by the drag community.
I love DragCon. To me, it kind of has like a Burning Man vibe where we all get together every, you know, year and to see some of the same folks. And it also has that vibe of like building like a little village because we all have to build our little, you know, corners to meet and greet everyone. It's so fun to me. I do more for fun. It's a great place to meet the people that support me all year round and see a lot of my, LGBTQ family.
I imagine just the vibe of those things is just so much love, it seems, in the room when you do these kind of appearances and get to meet people and just have those conversations.
Yeah, I mean, you know, some of it's a little bit of trauma dumping. Like, some people have a really big emotional attachment to media, like, you know, a past relative who they used to have, used to watch a movie with, or someone who, you know, or something nice, like they grew up with all their friends and it was like all their favorite quotes or whatever, you know, or they went on a date to go see some scary movie I was in. It's just interesting how it affects people in different ways. And so it's an emotional, fun day to sit there and one by one hear stories of how people connect with you.
Do you meet many people there then who act like they've known you for years? Do people come up to you and like, because they've grown up with you or seen you about, or?
Yeah, people always go, what's it like? Is it weird? I'm like, well, it's weird if the people are weird. It's nervous if the people are nervous. It's nice if the people are nice. I honestly think the best way to go up to someone whose work that you like is to think of something really specific that you like. Like if you're like, oh, that line in that scene where you, then you have their attention. You know, if you have something really specific you like, you're able to have a talking point. But, you know, for the most part, people that like my stuff are smart and cool, and so I enjoy it.
Morgan likes it.
And clearly Morgan has really good taste.
Hey! you had the chance to make a joke at my expense, and you didn't. And I love you for that, Danny. Thank you.
That's rare on this podcast. That's very rare.
But no, honestly, there's so many things I want to talk to you about throughout this conversation, but I would be remiss if I didn't dive into Mean Girls a little bit, if that's okay with you, because it is honestly my number one comfort film.
Honest.
I take every opportunity I can to talk about it, quote it, reference it in everyday life, and especially on this podcast. And Sean is kind of fed up of that by now. But like, it's just always been a beloved pop culture classic, especially now with the musical version in cinemas as we record this. But like, what's it been like for you living with that film for the last 20 years and just seeing its legacy becoming an important constant in people's lives?
It's a really big question because it's been like a roller coaster of emotions. Like I, you know, it's in the nicest way possible. It's like an abusive parent. Like I feel like I, you know, there's things about it that, you know, have held me back or made things weird or whatever for me. But for the most part, all these really great things have come out of it. I've met so many friends because of it. I get to travel the world still because of this movie. People are like, you know, even my stand up, if someone comes to see my stand up, they haven't seen my stand up, they already like me from the movie before they see my stand up. I'm already winning walking in. So I've had so many blessings that come from this movie. I can't badmouth that at all, but it has been a tumultuous ride, especially, you know, not being out of the closet when I made the movie. So there was a lot of years that, like, I was struggling against stereotype. You know, that's just the way Hollywood is in general, I guess.
Yeah. Well, how long after the movie coming out did you come out?
10 years. I came out the 10-year anniversary.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
There was, like, a long journey there. You know, now we're at 20 years, so I'm 10 years out, and I was 10 years in, so.
Yeah. So you're going to go back? Yeah, you're going to go back in? No, just keep doing that every 10 years.
No. It was kind of like that because probably about 5 years before Mean Girls, I got out of conversion therapy and I actually came out to my friends and family. And then it was like, I was living an out life until I got that movie. And then I'm like, I better tone it down a little bit because I was starting to lose opportunities for straight roles. After playing that part, they wouldn't even see me at auditions or stuff. So it like really,
oh wow.
And then, you know, all the gay stuff, they were looking for somebody different than Mean Girls because that was so popular. They wanted it. So I wasn't getting gay stuff. I wasn't getting straight stuff. It was a very hard time for a while. And it's a very specific kind of annoying to be very famous and very poor. Like it was like, it felt a little bit like having a lottery ticket in your pocket and then washing it in the washing machine. Like you saw it. It was like, you know, the beginning of it. But I still, you know, once I came out of the closet, especially like right before the 10th anniversary and started doing like stand up and really realizing and creating my own stuff and not worrying about these gatekeepers telling me what I can and can't do, that's when everything started to really take off for me. Mm. It wasn't like the first thing I created, but it was like maybe like the 10th thing I created that all of a sudden, you know, things started like picking up and I'm going, okay, this is more how I'm supposed to be filtering this artistry. These gifts are supposed to go through creation, not necessarily like waiting at some, you know, gatekeeper's door.
Yeah, it's weird that you mentioned that like being famous but poor. I guess, yeah, that's the life of being in a band, basically, unless you're one of the top three bands of who are streaming. You are like, people love you and adore what you've done, and then yeah, you've got nothing to really show for it other than their love, which is lovely, but again, doesn't pay the bills.
Yeah, even a big movie, they're like, oh, I have the DVD. It's like, well, great. Like, so now, you know, like you put $10 towards my career. And I don't, you know, that's why we had the strike recently, because there was a lot of, like, Mean Girls came out around the time that like Netflix and streaming were kind of invented, and they never changed the rules for it. They can still consider it new media as if it was YouTube or something. And we never really got paid for any of those views on any of the streaming platforms. So,
wow.
Yeah. a little frustrating, but again, a big blessing because I got invited to prides and I got paid to do those kind of things. Like, you know, I made my money in other ways, but definitely not from that movie. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's just mad how industries like that work, really. But speaking of comedy, like, it does seem that became such a creative outlet for you away from acting and just gave you the freedom to do what you want. I mean, you know, there's been so many things you've done, from stand-up to rock operas to YouTube skits that had millions of views. Like, how much has finding comedy just allowed you to be free?
I think comedy was what saved me in my youth. Like, I definitely, like, came straight from home to play rehearsal to the TV. And I just, like, you know, the TV was my best friend. The TV raised me in a lot of ways. And it was like, I watched every comedy set, every everything. So when I finally figured out how to allow myself to do it, that was really such a breakthrough for me. And it's annoying in a way that, like, ever since I was a kid, when I went to theater school, they were always like, you need to create your own stuff. You need to create your own stuff. It was like the number one advice we got. But I never felt like a creator until I was forced to do it. Like, it was really like, I always just wanted to do other people's things. I was always excited. I felt more like a job hunter. Like, I was so excited to book a gig. Like, and I thought that was my job, was booking gigs, but really it was like creating the gig. And in turn, I ended up giving a lot of other people jobs and things to do on, you know?
Yeah. What was the moment like when you decided to do stand up for the first time? Cause I've been genuinely, I'm in an hour in about doing it.
I was on a TV show. I was a lead on this television show called Conviction with Hayley Atwell, great Brit actress. And she, you know, they really weren't using me that much. Like, Hayley Atwell was the lead of the show and I was playing her brother and she lived with me. And, you know, she would go to work and the show was like about her job, about dealing with wrongful convictions. So she would, like, in the morning, like, my character would be like, hey, you forgot your coffee, and then she would, like, start the episode, and then she would, like, come home and be like, have a glass of wine and tell me about your day, and then she would do a monologue. And it was like, I was not really being used yet. Like, I know that as time gone on they would have written more for me or whatever, but I was feeling really frustrated living in Toronto, a new city, new country, like, working on this show and working one day every 2 weeks and the rest of the time just being like, what do I do with my time, you know? And so I always had Sundays off, and I looked up Second City Toronto, which I was like, wow, this is like the birthplace of, like, Catherine O'Hara and Eugene Levy and Martin Short and John Candy and all these greats. And when I was 12, I used to love Second City TV, and I always wanted to go there, but I was never in Chicago or never in Toronto. Like, when would I have the opportunity? And I'm like, I'm going to be here a year, and I could take a Sunday class, whatever they're teaching on Sunday. So I looked it up and it was stand-up comedy. And I'm like, oh, of course. And my New Year's resolution had been to try stand-up again, you know, because I'd given it a few goes before, a little nervously. You know, you bomb once and you feel like, oh my gosh, that's how it's going to be forever. You know, you can't figure out how to see past that. And I took the class and it was literally in the first 5 minutes of the first class, the teacher was like, it's called a routine because you routinely do the same routine. And I was like, I don't have to write new material every time I get on stage. Like, what I'm doing is building, like, a little play. And I'm like, I could do that. Like, and then immediately I was writing 2 hours a day. I just was like, I had so much to say. And I just, like, I started hitting open mics before I even did my finale in the class. As a matter of fact, I never actually did the finale because I had to leave town for a gig. And I was just like, I'm just going to start performing. And people, the first open mics, I was like, oh my gosh, in Mean Girls, why are you doing an open mic? And it was like all the 10 years I had suffered of being like, Mean Girls holding me back. This was something that Mean Girls lit fire to. And so it was like, they'd be like, come back next week and we'll give you a spot. And then it would be like, after a while, I would fill the spot. And they'd be like, hey, we're doing this other show. And I went to Florida for a few months to visit my family in Miami and South Florida and Fort Lauderdale. And I did open mics around there. And then I was like, I needed to build up a set before I got to LA. I didn't want to go to LA and have nothing, you know, go back to LA. So then when I went back to LA, literally my first weeks of stand up, somebody was like, hey, somebody broke their leg or something and they can't do Aspen Gay Ski Week. Do you want this multi-thousand-dollar job to do an hour? And I had like 3 minutes of material. Yeah. I was like, I was never turning down this money again. Like, I have already built up a name in comedy that allows me to do these headlining gigs. I've got to come up with a show. And so it was a hustle. I was going to open mics 3 times a day for months. And like, really, like, it didn't matter if I was famous. It didn't matter if I had a ticket and wait 2 hours to do 5 minutes. I took my time. I earned my dues and I really busted my butt. And then I came up with like 18 minutes, you know, after like a really long time. And then someone was like, we want to hire you to do 25 minutes. And I was like, oh my God, okay, I'll take it. And I was like,
yeah,
terrified and kind of like, you know, crowd worked and bullshit my way through the first couple, you know, and I was, by the time I got to my actual set, I still had some extra minutes at the end. And it felt so exhilarating that I was like, I want more. And I mean, that was like, now that was 10 years ago. And, you know, now I have like probably an hour and a half of material and I do at least an hour a week around the world. And
it's been so
fun and so great and so giving to me. And it's such an amazing thing to know that I just need like a microphone and me, and I could give you like a full show. Like, studies have shown I don't even need good lighting or a sturdy stage. But you know what? Like a picnic table, a Singalodian, and you got me there. I'm like ready to go. Karaoke machine, and we got this. Like, so, it's just been really great. And I've used that, I guess some people would say, fast tracking into like, you know, headlining to open the doors for so many other comics. Like, I would, you know, I figure if some places, like there's a comedy club here called Flappers, and they're like, the owner of the club became my manager and was like, you could have anything you want a month. You want to do an hour a month? And I was like, no, I want to do a show with all other queer comedians. So I started a show where I would help, you know, Pied Piper, a lot of people that were queer that were in sketch that had the same fears that I had of doing stand up into doing stand up themselves. So I give a lot of guys and girls their start and theys and thems their starts. And, you know, always try to keep a very diverse group of friends and people around. And then, you know, in 10 years, I've earned my way as a stand-up now, I believe, you know, where maybe in the beginning I was stumbling. But now I have all these wonderful relationships of all people who I helped give a start to in the industry are all killing it. And like, you know, I got my own class of stand-ups to come up with that maybe 10 years ago, I might have, if I would have been able to be comfortable who I was, if the world was a different place, perhaps I would have come up with other people that are really famous now, you know, like, but I, you know, I caught like a wave of a really big group of people, and I have great family in the industry now. So I have a great time and I'm doing stand up all the time. I do stand up at the Comedy Store next week. I'm hyped about that. And it's like, nice. All, you know, just like all kinds of places all over.
Yeah. What room are you doing in the Comedy Store?
The main room, yeah.
Nice. And
it's a very sick cast. It's got so many people that are amazing on it. I know Margaret Cho's on this one. I often work with Sarah Silverman, Arsenio Hall on that show, Pauly Shore. Like, it's all like an all headliner show.
I've just gone cold. Yeah, I've just gone cold as you've named them fucking people. Wow.
I did too. Like when I first started working with them, it took me a while to feel worthy to work with some of those people. But, you know, I'm finally in a place where I'm so comfortable in what I'm doing and loving the audience. The audience loves me and I'm a very happy place in my art with stand-up.
That's amazing. Yeah, you've named some fucking unbelievable names. What's Pauly Shore like? Is he as mad as he seems on?
He's really cool. I really like him, especially all this stuff he's been talking about lately with the Richard Simmons movie. Like, yeah. I know Richard Simmons. Like, I used to take his class back in the day. Whoa. It was one of the most novel things I did when I got to LA. Somebody was like, do you want to take Richard Simmons' class? And I was like, oh, like, Richard Simmons, like, owns an exorcist class? They're like, no, he hosts it. And I'm like, when? And so the story behind this is actually really funny. I had heard about it for so long, but I never actually went. Like, I had heard it existed and I was like, oh, I'm gonna go to that. And it was at his gym called Slimmons, right? Richard Simmons says it had a gym called Slimmons.
Nice.
And so
of course he did.
Yeah, I know. And so I was like, I'm gonna go. And my mom and sister came to come visit me in Florida. and we pranked my sister. We didn't tell her that we were, that Richard Simmons was actually teaching the class. We're like, oh, we're going to, we were hyping it up that we were going to Richard Simmons' gym, but we're like, he doesn't ever teach. He's very busy. He tours the world. You know, she did not at all see it coming. It was her first time in LA, you know? And, we got really stoned in the parking lot and like, we went in, we went into the class and, you know, it was at first, it was like getting started and everybody was rallying up and there was pictures of him everywhere. And I didn't actually take into account how I would feel when I saw Richard Simmons in person. Like, I just was really like, oh, I'm going to get my sister, you know? And my sister was so hyped. She, at the time, she was training for the Fire Academy. She was like all in good shape. She was like, let's go, let's go. And like this, I just will remember forever that the song, like, Let's Hear It for the Boy from Footloose was on. And she was like, let's get up on the ball. And she's going off like this. And then I saw him walk in and I gagged a little. Like, I got starstruck. And I, like, hit my boyfriend at the time and I hit my mom. And we were like, look. And we looked over and we saw him. And we all were like, oh, my God. Like, and then my sister was like, let's go. She was like, and then he came in and he pointed right at her and screamed at the top of his lungs. He was like, don't get started without me in here. And she went, ah! She thought he surprised the whole class. So she screamed. She was the only one that screamed. It actually scared him a little bit, which was like really hard to do. And then the joke's on us. We have an hour workout class ahead of us. Like I was ready to go home after that. Like, I was like, we did it.
And that's enough. Like, right.
And then he's like, let's get started. And we're like, oh shit, we got to work out now. And, yeah, and the workout was hard. But, you know, like, we were conking out in the middle of it. And then, like, you know, he was like, lift up some weights. And there was like 3 to 5 pound weights or 3 to 10 pound weights. I'm like, I'm going to take the 10. Like, let the ladies get the threes. And these ladies were like, you know, the full, like, mama arms, you know, like, are like lifting weights. Like, it's nothing, doing the moves. Like, it's nothing. I'm falling behind in the choreography. He's like, 5, 6, 7, 8. It was like a big Broadway audition. And we were busting butt. And the whole time, I honestly had tears rolling down my face because I was laughing so hard. And I'm like, everyone's going to think I'm crying because I'm fat and he's going to save my life. Like, I was just like crying. Like, I couldn't help myself. My face was red because it was so funny that my sister kept looking at me. We couldn't process it because we were in the middle of choreography. Like, we were like doing like Grapevines and Pas de Bourrées, looking at each other like, this is really one for the books. Like, and then then it ended and he's like, everybody sit down. And we all sat down in a circle and he does like this end of class kind of like talk. And we're all like doing like really light yoga, like diet yoga. And then he's like telling us like some sad story and he starts crying and it was so emotional and deep. And we were like, oh my God, it was like the most bipolar aerobics class you could ever go to, but like, but I felt changed inside. It was more than calories I left on the floor that day. My heart was there. It was an amazing experience. But Polly has been like getting all this hype lately for looking so much like the dude. And Richard Simmons has been like, you know, hiding away, you know, trying to live a private life. And, you know, I think no one really knows what happened. And I know Richard hates being talked about, so I hope he doesn't hate I even say this, but I heard he had gotten an injury and then it like depressed him for a little bit. So he just like kind of was like, I'm going to retire, you know? And let me tell you something. I was saying at the SAM conventions, how it's a little bit of a trauma dump, you know? Like, I had someone come up to me once and be like, my brother is dead to our family. He's a drug addict on the streets. I haven't seen him since I'm a teenager. And like, I don't really have many good memories of him. But all the good memories I have of him are us quoting back your character back and forth from Mean Girls. And you are the good parts of my relationship with my brother. And then she held me and wept. Like, and wow. Like, what do you do with that? Right. And I just held, I'm a good person to talk to like that because I'm sensitive and I understand. And some people aren't like that. Like, especially like people, how they deal with their fans, but I held her and we had a little moment. My sister-in-law was crying. She was working my booth with me. We were at a Florida SuperCon and it was like really intense. Right. Richard gets things like that hundreds of times a day from all over the world and does his best to try to receive them. And I think at some point he just had to like close down, you know, the mailbox, like was just like, I need a break, you know? So Polly happens to look a lot like Richard, like as Polly's getting older, he's very like looks like him a lot. And there's all, this internet talk about him making a movie, and he's very serious about it, and he's going in to make this big movie. I think he's very earnest. I think he's going to do a great job. I think it's going to give him a lot of recognition, and I think it's going to bring Richard's going to get his flowers where he deserves it, because both of those men deserve flowers, you know. Paulie's, so. You know, yeah. And so it's exciting. So to answer your question, Paulie's nice.
Yeah, good. Thank you.
That's one hell of an experience, though. Like, honestly, wow. It's, like,
that's the way you answer a question on a podcast.
Yes, yes, it is. Perfect. Yeah, that's
the. Do you know what? Yeah, the amount of people we've had on, right?
Because, darling, that's literally what's happening. Okay.
Hey. Oh,
nice. Yes.
Yeah.
We've had quite a few people on you who are in like big bands or whatever, and they come on and beforehand they're very talkative, and but then as soon as we start it's just one word answers. But that was absolutely perfect.
Well, that ain't me bro.
but no, you talk about like those connection and what things mean to people. You must get that all the time, especially online and stuff, because I feel Damien was such an important character, not just for the film, but for people's lives who were watching, who were dealing with not being confident or their sexuality or body positivity, like especially around the time where that wasn't really talked about as much as it is today. Like, as much as the ups and downs you've had with that film, I'm sure that's an element of it you're extremely proud of what people took away from it.
Look, I know that I started on a note. I just tried to start on a real note, not a low note. But like, I love being a part of this movie. I love fandom. Yeah. I'm a fangirl, like at heart. Like when I was 16 years old, I wrote letters to like every celebrity that I liked. And if you would have seen the autographed pictures that I got back, you would have known I was gay before I did. Like it was like. It was like B. Arthur, Bette Midler, Oprah. Like, you know, like
B. Arthur!
The boy's gay. The boy's gay, Margaret. You know, it's like very like, you know, that. But like, but yeah, I, you know, so to me, like I carry stickers around with me sometimes, like when I'm traveling. So if someone recognizes me in a moment where I can't take a picture, like at airport, I can at least give them something and be like, you got this for me? Like, you know, I feel like at this point, I am an entertainer. But part of my job as an entertainer is I'm a purveyor of joy. Like I go to stand up and I make people laugh. I go to meet and greets and I make people smile and give them hugs and give them good memories. I, you know, make movies that make people, whether they're even scary movies or serious movies or true crime or whatever movies or projects I'm working on, they bring people solace. Entertainment gives people an escape. And so I just want to make as much joy as I possibly can. I want to just bring people joy. That's literally like what I feel like the rest of my mission on this earth is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you emanate it. I feel like you, yeah, from like, to be honest, like I had, I didn't have much, like I've seen Mean Girls, obviously. I am from Wales, but I don't live in a cave. But yeah, just seeing you and yeah, getting to speak to you, you just fucking radiate it. So yeah, we really appreciate you being here and yeah, I love your energy.
You've brought joy to my life so many times over that I can't even count with that. But as well, like one thing I did want to ask is, did you ever think that the scene with you in the blue hoodie and the glasses and saying she doesn't even go here would turn into such an iconic meme for the last 20 years, to the point now where people are literally dressing up as you in that scene to go to the cinema or to go to fancy dress parties. And it's just like, that has taken its own lease of life over the last two decades.
Honestly, I don't, because I kind of chose the hoodie with the casting director. And I kind of like, you know, the prop master was like, here's the sunglasses, pick which ones you want. And I kind of was like, those. Like, it was like very matter of fact, the whole thing. Like, for it to become iconic is kind of weird. I probably would have been like, told all the extras to hand me a dollar. I'll explain later. It'll be really funny in 20 years. Like, like, if I would have known that anything in that scene would have been iconic, I would have made that a thing. But like, I, but truly, no. And one of the funniest things for me is to just see a Damien in the wild, like someone who's actually wearing sunglasses and a blue hoodie up over their head, like, and just walking around. Like, I see a lot of Damiens in the wild that don't know that they're Damiens, and it's very funny to me. I once chased an elderly Asian woman, like, around three blocks trying to get a video of her walking around looking like me with it scrunched up and everything. I was like, oh my God, this would just be amazing. But I thought if I jumped out of the car, I probably would scare her. She'd probably run away or something. But it would have been, even then, a good TikTok.
Very good TikTok.
Yeah, funnily enough, I started a series on my Instagram called Is It Jan? Right? So my mother's name is Jan, right? And she's got like white gray hair. She's got that, like, I guess some people would call it the Karen look, right? She's got that fucking little bit of a fringe or whatever. So I've literally started going around every grey-haired woman I see from behind. Even some men. Oh, I just go up to them and I'm like, Is it Jan? No! It's not Jan! But that's awesome. Yeah, chasing an Asian woman dressed as Damien. Oh, that's my new highlight of this podcast, I think. Thank you very much.
Just one more thing about the character I did want to talk about is just, you know, at first, it must be so weird kind of hearing that somebody else is going to be playing a character that you've had to live with for so long. But there's such a beautiful moment with you and Jaquiel at the premiere where you just kind of embraced each other. And he posted this very wholesome caption online and just kind of saying about your inspiration and just being the blueprint for so many people. Like, what's the relationship being like with you two, and how was the premiere, and how was it for you just seeing the film being interpreted in a different way and just the love being there even more so?
It was a really good experience for me. I was, you know, a little, I don't know, it's weird. But I think all of the uncomfortableness about the musical being created happened when Broadway happened. Like, I saw it, I already knew how the lines were changed, I already knew what to expect. So seeing this was a movie of the musical, it didn't really feel like a remake of our movie. Like, I just felt like the source material, which was actually a really big honor. And to meet Jaquiel was just, it was, I mean, I had to really try to stop from bawling, you know, because I feel like, you know, again, abusive parent syndrome. Like, it's like, you know, I get a lot of appreciation from the world from this movie, but maybe not necessarily from Paramount or from Tina. I haven't seen Tina since we made the movie. So a lot of that was emotional for me to see them and to be like, okay, you know, you guys, you know, do appreciate what I contributed. And, you know, it felt a little more like accepting. And for him too, it wasn't like I was being like replaced. He was saying I had to, like, you know, you helped lift me up to this point. Like, and that was, I needed that just as a human being, maybe. And for it to happen very public in front of all the lights and cameras was, a little awkward, you know, but a lot of my life has happened that way. So again, this is huge, right? So it's like, but it was a really special moment to me. And I'm so grateful to have it caught on camera because it just reminds me of how you don't even know how someone could, how your work could affect somebody. I had no idea making a teen comedy, which if people always go, did you think it was going to be so successful? I thought it was going to be someone's favorite movie. Like one of those like really fun movies, like those early, you know, early SNL movies. That was like, oh, this will be someone's favorite movie, like Coneheads or Cop Check. It'll be something that, or, you know, people love, but maybe not everyone has seen in the world. But for it to be a door for a lot of plus-sized LGBTQ others to feel like they could be in a place where, you know, they're not beat up and, you know, the school celebrates them and there's a world out there. I mean, it's 20 years, right? So like around the 10th anniversary, what made me come out is I tell the story all the time, but it's worth repeating. I got a letter from a fan that said that they were tortured for being chubby and beat up for being sissy in eighth grade. And then the movie came out. And then when they went to the first year of high school, on the first day of school, the popular senior girls walked up to them and said, you're like Damien, come sit with us. And that they were popular for all 4 years of high school after being like bullied their whole life. That's huge. I definitely think that I could have been a more popular kid in high school had Damien existed before I went there. Because I was that person, you know? And then now we're reaching 20 years and there's this really incredible young queer director named Asad Yacoub, who has been winning all these awards for directing. He directed the Hello Hello video from Trixie Mattel and won Queerty Award at the Queerties and came off the stage in beeline for me. And we had met before, but not in a way he could tell me what he wanted to say. And with the award in his hand, he was like, I'm here because of you, Habibi. He's like, when I was a kid, he's like, every gay person I ever saw was like ostracized or punished or cut from films. And for some reason, because Damien didn't have a kiss and didn't have a boyfriend and never said he was gay, he made it through the censors. And I knew growing up as a kid in Dubai that I could move to America and have a life where I could be comfortable and accepted.
Wow.
Man, if I never do anything else on this earth, like the fact that I did that for someone who's so talented and so gifted, but who knows who else? Like, you know, for every one person that tells you, there's 100 people that don't say anything, I feel like. You 100%, know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and I feel like it's so, those moments are so powerful to me. And being a guy who's kind of spiritual and close to like my creator, like I'm reminded every day that like I am blessed with something like this. So, you know, maybe I, you know, don't get the cut. You know, maybe like Gray Henson gets a Tony nomination and maybe Chakal will get next year's Golden Globe nomination or whatever. And maybe I didn't even get like a GLAAD award, you know, like, you know, yeah. But like, it doesn't matter to me because sometimes the trailblazers get the arrows and not the land. And I'm so happy to have a contribution to this art form that I love that moved the envelope forward for my people.
Well, that's absolutely fucking wonderful. Like, I literally had goosebumps then when you said how much like you'd influence. Like, it's crazy. Yeah. It's amazing.
There's a lot of stories like that. And there's all these like side stories. A really great one was this girl said in Dallas, Texas, that she had a gay best friend and he wasn't allowed in the house. And the mom always yelled at him for hanging out with him, even though she knew him from church. And she just didn't want to be around them. And then they saw Mean Girls and the mom loved Damien and wanted to have him around more. And now he's allowed to sleep over and eat dinner. And I literally like set a place at dinner for some kid who's wanted to be sitting at a table. Like, I don't even know. And that person probably never write me again. I won't even remember who it was. But it's like, there's so many of these stories out there that just humble me every day and make me realize, you know, this is a little bit away from Mean Girls, but like one day I was like, I was just telling this story the other day when I was talking to somebody about social media and I just was like, I need to put up some content and I want it to be something positive and I don't have anything to say today. So I just tweeted, if you haven't heard it today, you're loved and your life matters and I love you or whatever. It was just, it came from an earnest place, but it was like coming from a place of like, I need to say something nice right now, just because I feel like it. And I had somebody walk up to me once at an event or a red carpet and hand me a wrapped gift. And when I opened it, it was this beautiful little collage of me in a scene. And in the back, there was a card that said that they were going to unlive themselves that day until they saw that tweet. And that tweet made them feel like, you know, it just reminded them who they were and reminded them that that's somebody we care about them. And I didn't even, like, I didn't mean it when I wrote the tweet, but like, I was just writing the tweet out, like, in case somebody needs this, like, I didn't feel the energy or anything, but somebody needed that message. And it makes me realize what small little pieces of joy that I could put out there, whether it's like a sticker I give someone that they put on their water bottle and then everyone who mentions it, they go, I met him and like, it was so good. And they just get a little bit of dopamine. Like, the freaking world is burning. If I could give somebody a little bit of dopamine, like, I'll do it. Whatever it takes. You know what I'm saying? Like, just brighten your day a little bit, you know?
Yeah. No. Yeah, that is, again, connection is such a big part of everything. And saying about giving people their flowers, if I had someone to actually give them to you, you definitely deserve a bouquet of something.
Don't get me wrong. I like rude comedy. I like insult comedy. I think it's very funny. It tickles me in a very special place when somebody's shady, but I feel bad. I actually feel bad when I'm that way. Like, I don't think I could, even though like I could write jokes privately for a roast battle and be amazing, but like, I don't, but sometimes unless, you know, I don't know. I've just seen people like actually at roast battles, like go home and be like, do I really have man titties? And be like upset for like a month, you know, like, and I'd be like, dude, that's a joke, right? Like a comedy thing, you know, those things like kind of do affect people. And I just made like a conscious decision at some point to try to put good into the world.
Well, yeah, we need that more than ever. Because, like you said, the world is on fucking fire and nobody's doing anything about it.
I was like, you know, and it's interesting, especially in the gay community. I was talking to some guy at a bar recently, like within the last 6 months, and like I was saying something to him and he was going, oh, did you see whatever movie, Barbie or whatever it was? I don't know what it was. He was just saying something. Did you see it? It was like, and I'm like, I liked it. And he's like, oh, I'm like, well, what did you like? I'm like, can we talk about only the positive things? Like, I don't want to hear about movies you don't like or pop stars you think are getting too old, or I'd like just talk about good things. Like, tell me the pop star you like. Tell me the movie you like. The world is full of shit. I just need a little bit of light right now. So it's like, I don't, you know, and he found it really difficult to continue the conversation without being negative. Like, everything he was saying, I'm like, you're being negative again. Like, I want to continue to talk to you, but you're being negative. And he was like, well, I guess I'm, am I, it was on Halloween. Now I remember it was on Halloween. Some guy tried to talk to me and I'm literally just Care Bear, bro. I was like, do you really think I want to hear your shit? Like, everyone's having a good time tonight. Pick one of these beautiful people that are into something cool and don't tell me about the costume that's lame. Tell me about the cool thing. Don't tell me about the movie you didn't like. Tell me about the good thing. Like, and he couldn't. He ended up walking away because he couldn't. Like, some people just can't function without being evil. And I'm like the opposite of that. I immediately, my skin crawls when people start talking shit about somebody. I was at the RuPaul's Drag Race finale once, and I had celebrities sitting behind me that were talking shit about every queen, and I was like, why are you even here? Like, I'm a huge fan of this, and these queer people who are our siblings are giving like their all now. This is a very important day to them, and they're trying to come with their best drag and present it for us, you know what I mean? And it's a lot of work, and it's a lot of time for them to look and be like, and you're sitting here judging scenes and shit. Like, you're not a judge. Shut up. Go home. Like, I don't like it.
You had me cry. I'm genuinely crying laughing at the thought of you dressed as a K-Bear having to take on prick's negativity. Yeah.
I was like, what about Tender Heart Bear? Don't you understand?
Oh. I'm gone. Carry on, Morg.
Is there anything you do in your day-to-day life to just to kind of keep those positivity levels up? Like, is there any moments you take any like little self-care routines? Like, what for you is when things are getting too much, you're like, right, I need more positive power.
First thing is, my family is my rock. Like, honestly, like, I have a really great family, and I talk to my mom, my sister, like whoever, my niece, or every day. Like, I talk to somebody over there and find out what's going on. You know what I mean? And that just connects me to reality. I could never be too big for my britches. Like, I could never be that kind of famous person that's like, dude, well, first of all, they don't make pants that big. No, I was saying like, they couldn't, like, every time people are like, oh, you're so humble. I'm like, my mother would kick my ass. Like, are you kidding me? Like, she's like, who are you? Go answer them. Go give them an autograph. Forget it. Now he's taking a picture with you and you're getting a free cameo. How dare you? Like she never, like, and honestly, she doesn't have to even be with me for me to hear that stuff. I mean, she's still, you know, very healthy and alive and with us. But like, something will happen. Like, I had a bag of like makeup, like cover up or whatever, concealer, open up in my suitcase because I don't really have a makeup bag. So like, everything went all over. And as I'm cleaning it up, I heard my mom being like, I told you to put it in a separate bag and it should be wrapped up and you should tape this and it shouldn't be here. And I feel like long after she's gone on this earth, I'm going to have her on my shoulder telling me what to do in her own voice and be like, fine, you know.
The voice is always going to be with you. Just, just over the shoulder. Oh.
What was her reaction when you started doing the shit Italian mum says videos and they started exploding?
First, she was like, I don't sound like that, do I? Which is so ridiculous because I think every Italian mum that first saw that, it took a while for them to embrace it. And now she's like, I think it's a masterpiece. Lay it all the way to the bank, honey. That's what she says. Like, I just did a full show last year, Italian Mom Loves You, where I do a full hour play as her. And it did really well in Connecticut. We're still workshopping it and developing it for bigger things. But yeah, it's been, you know, really fun. I mean, I had a 26 episode Instagram series where I played the Italian Mom character. Out of all of the things I've done, I think I could laugh at that one the most. Because to me, to me, it's like a prank. It's like, oh, I got her. You know, it's like, it's more like I pranked my mom than it is like I'm acting.
Has she asked for any sort of percentage for it?
Oh, she gets her share, believe me. I have a whole thing for her called hashtag spoil the mommy. I definitely spoil her. I love spoiling her. So she gets, I want to make, like, honestly, like, I almost lost my mom, like, about during the pandemic. She had, she needed double hip replacements, and then we had the quarantine, and, you know, she was, like, really, like, hurting and in so much pain with the hips, and then tried to go get one taken care of, and she died and got revived on the table. Like, it was, like, a whole thing. She had the wrong anesthetic, and so we found her the perfect surgeon. Like, she's, you know, lost 90 pounds, and she has two new hips, and she's living the best life right now. So the moral of the story is she's great. But when I almost lost her, I was like, man, like, I was like, I need to just spend every waking moment with every person that I love, period.
Mm.
Like, and treat them like this is the last year I have with them. And, you know, not, you know, cause the pandemic made us all think about mortality. And I was just like, I need to, like, really spend time with my dad and talk to him. I need to really spend time with my siblings and my little nibblings and, like, figure out what they need. And, you know, during the pandemic, I homeschooled my niece in second grade the whole time because I lost all of my show dates and I had nothing to do. And she was still in school online. And, you know, my brother and sister-in-law were working and couldn't help her. And so 11 to 4 every day, I was doing, like, a full day of, like, second grade. Like, but, you know, she went from, like, you know, getting, like, D's to, like, being, she got straight A's last year in sixth grade. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, it's just like, I totally put her on the right track. And it's like, you know, I think that investing in the people that have been there for you all along was something that I lost my way on a little while. I tried to make all these new famous Hollywood friends my first couple of years out in the industry. And then when you realize that those people are just colleagues and they, as soon as you aren't hot, they go away and you're off the birthday party list and all these other things. And,
yep.
You know, if I one day I'll get an Emmy or an Oscar nomination and everyone will invite me to their parties again and I'll accept because they're not my friend. They're not my friends. They're my colleagues. I'm very, like, if you're lucky to have one or two really close friends outside of your family, like, I could say I have honestly like a group of like six, seven people that I love that would throw themselves in front of a bus for me and I would do the same. And it's like, I'm very wealthy with my friends. I may not have made money from Mean Girls, but in my life, I've made friends that are worth their weight in gold. And it's like, so my friends and family are really my support system. God is my support system. So how do I navigate it all? That's how. That's what I do when it gets all too crazy. When everything's like nuts, I could always, you know, swing back to go visit my family for a little bit and take a break or hit up one of my friends and go stay with them. And it's very rejuvenating for me. My idea in the beginning, like when I was little and writing letters to, you know, Bette Midler, I was thinking, oh, I hope one day I'm famous and somebody wants to, like, you know, get my autograph. And then, you know, when I went to college, I was like, oh, I hope someday will somebody after show says, hey, I want to smoke weed with you. You know, I was like, oh, that'd be cool to be like somebody that somebody wants to smoke with, you know. But I think like the goal now is just that all my friends thrive off of me. Like, how can we make this like, How could I make everybody come to the party and everybody get a taste and everybody have a good time? So I always try to carry my friends into everything I do and, you know, my family and just try to build a community and hold on to the people that are good. It's like people curating.
That's wonderful. Yeah, that's lovely to hear.
Thanks for sharing that. And it's just nice that even though you've gone through some troubles there, it's nice the fact that you can share those laughs with the family and just embrace the friendship of everyone going around and just, you know, and share the love.
If not, if all fails, I recommend a stretchy cheeseburger toy because it really takes the stress out of life.
So. Nice. I'll have to get one. I've got to get one.
To be fair, you could do with one, I'm sure. I think maybe we need to invest.
Definitely a must. Yeah.
Well, Danny, as we start to wind down on this conversation a little bit, I've honestly loved all of this, but
me too.
We've talked about so many different elements of your career. I would love to know how you go about writing a rock opera because, you know, there's some albums that we're into that kind of have that vibe, but to translate that into a show from scratch, like, please, just if you can, just tell us that process and like the music you're into and maybe the music that inspired that.
Me and my partner, Hannelore Payton, she was writing other musicals and asked me to be in some musical that I couldn't be in. it was like this parody of Glee. And I was like, well, I can't do that, but would you want to write one? And she was like, okay. And me, like, when I dream big. Like, I go huge, you know? So it started out as, like, this 15-minute Upright Citizens Brigade comedy show. And I'm like, we should make it an hour. We should make it an hour and a half. We should get it into the Fringe Festival. We should. And I kept pushing it and growing it. And, you know, we had an amazing cast of people. Like, the original cast, which was so incredible. I had two of the girls from Glow in it. Mikey Day was the situation. Like, we were like, you know, it was just, like, so much fun, you know? And then it grew on. Where we had like, we had a different guest star play the grenade, the ugly girl, in like every episode. And we had Kyle Mooney and Harvey Dean and Jason Ritter. And like, I mean, it was just like one after the other of people all now who are like, you know, all doing so well and so great. And it was just so cool to meet all those people, work with all of them, have such a good time, do something all together. Just writing, I guess you know, I kind of am like a frustrated rapper a little bit. I have done some like funny rap stuff online. I put out a Christmas rap album and I've done some like guest spots on other people's music just for fun and stuff like that. But I love writing lyrics. Like I'm known for trying to fit too many words into like one sentence. And for a lot of people, that's like really frustrating, you know, but I always work best with a creative partner. You know, everything I've done, even Italian Mom, I wrote with Jacques Lamar, and like I have different partners for each thing I do, mostly because I work on so many different things that I need to have somebody keeping me on track on each thing we're working on. But also because I need someone to edit me. I just go off the rails. I have a million ideas. I never stop. So I need someone to help edit and structure and say, no, what we need is something to fit here. And then you give me an assignment, I will deliver. Like, a lot of times when I'm left to my own devices on creativity, I have a bunch of unfinished projects, you know, like, but when I finally tell somebody, hey, do you want to work on this project with me? And they're really committed. Then all of a sudden that idea takes the forefront and it moves forward and it ends up getting done. I'm a person who needs help. That's why I rely on my community a lot. I love my community around me. I would say the one thing I do by myself is my stand up, really. I mean, I do take advice from friends or tips or like, you know, someone says, oh, here's a button, but that's like the one thing I really sit and do all alone.
And you've given so many amazing podcast answers. I think it would be rude if we didn't mention your podcast, Yes, Jesus. Yeah. Please have the floor for a minute.
You actually pronounced that wrong. It's Yas, Jesus.
See, I didn't think I could get away with it. So I thought I would just I'd just leave that bit out. I didn't want to offend anyone. I didn't want to. Like,
no, you have to say it as gay as possible or it is offensive.
Yeah, the thing is, see, we have so many guests who come on who try the Welsh accent who end up sounding Indian.
I can't do it. I can't do Welsh. I can't do Australian. I can't do all these other. I can't.
It's not far. Yeah, they're not a million miles away from each other. Like, I
can do other kinds of British. Although, if I worked with a dialect coach, I would probably be able to get it perfect. Like, when I really work on something, then I get it and I have it forever.
Can we hear your English real quick? Can we hear your... All right, I'm from London.
No, I did Robin Hood that came from the Royal Shakespeare Company, but then went to Best Support, and then we did it here in Beverly Hills. And I played Mid Marian's butler and clown, and they'd be like, it's time for your music lesson. I enjoy the Queen Mother. You know, so like, I had like a little voice like that. You know, and then I became Big Peter, where I talk a bit like this and be a little bit tough. When he went and hung with the married men, you know, like, so I have like a couple of versions.
That's class. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Well done. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
But please have the floor for a few minutes just to talk about Yas, Jesus. As much as you'd like.
He's had to try.
I can't say it normal again.
Apologies to the gay community for Morgan's attempting.
Bottom line with Yas Jesus is it's just a faith and queer affirming podcast together and a sexuality affirming podcast. We believe that you don't have to choose between gay and God. We say that we're faithfully on our knees for the Lord. So, you know, we think that you can have sex, you can be all the things that you are on earth and still love God and still be a part of that and still, you know, benefit from the teachings that are in the Bible. Like all these Christian right people that say that queer folks aren't allowed to have a place in the kingdom of God also claim that this Bible is like the owner's manual to life. It's got everything that you need to know in it, but then they gatekeep it from us instead of offering it. They only offer it in judgmental ways. And a lot of organized religion, which I'm very against, but like a lot of organized religion will also say, this is the word, do not ask any questions, go home. Like, and then you're like, what? Like, I think that it's, you're meant to wonder. We don't Bible study, we Bible wonder. We like talk about stuff. You know, there's sexual situations in the Bible. There's queer stories in the Bible that we're just not told. Like, you know, the perspectives aren't given to us. So why not take this, put it through a comedic rainbow lens, and, you know, call it all the cons in the religious community, but also talk about the stuff that's really amazing in the Bible that we could use and make it applicable to queer life. The best way that I could describe it in a layman's terms is, like, I think about IKEA, right? Like, IKEA, like, makes all this great functional furniture that is easy to put together, easy to ship. They make it easy, right? Their instruction booklets don't even have words. It's like pictures. So it's like really easy, right? To do everything. But imagine being a queer person and having to put all that stuff together and figure out all it is without the instruction booklet. I feel like that's kind of what the Christian people have done to ostracize queer people, to really just highlight our sin and make their sin feel less to them or whatever. And it's so politicized around real estate and money and politics and all these other things that, like, they can't back down. Even if they do love a gay person, they can't back down on their standpoint because they've gone too far at this point, you know? And now we as queer people have IKEA hacked. Like, there's all these great websites where they've taken like a flajorn and a Flarkenflugen, and they put them together and made like a gay vanity table. It's like, we can do whatever we want. And some of our shit's doper than their shit. And we're like, you know what? We don't need your religion to form community, form a life, and figure out how to work everything. But now I'm at the place where I'm like, oh, hold on a second. Give me the directions to the Flarkenflugen. Like, I want to see how that's actually put together, because maybe there are things that can be applicable to what I'm trying to do with my own life design. And I think there's no matter how anti-religion you are, there's no person that I think is going to say that there's absolutely zero thing of value that's going to be in the Bible or the Quran or any of those other items. Like, there's going to be something of value in like the Torah. There's something of value. So it's like, let's pull out all the valuable things. Let's talk about them for what they are, and let's discuss them. And some of the invaluable things are interesting. So let's talk about those too. And when something is specifically heteronormative, let's make it a little gay, honey. Like why not? They've been straight washing all our shit forever. It's like, why not take this thing, you know? And if you hate us and you don't want us to be a part of your church, then don't even look at what we're doing over here when we look at the Bible. We'll do our own thing. Like, and I think we're fostering a community. Not only that, we just got picked up by World of Wonder, which is really exciting. So nice. Now yes. we're like an amazing platform when you hear those incredible faith journeys on RuPaul's Drag Race for the queens to come on afterwards and follow up the story and get down deeper and let us know really what went down. You know, I know Mo Hart right now has been put up a bunch of videos lately on their social media just talking about how they're having difficulty conciling their Christianity and their queerness. And that's something that they're currently going through. So immediately we called Mo, and we're going to be interviewing them later on today. So it's like, now Mo can, instead of having to be restricted to a 5-minute TikTok hoping to keep people engaged to sort this out, they could sit down with us for an hour and really break down, what is this church hurt? What are you going through? Because so many people want to know that their heroes are feeling the same things that they're feeling. And so we had T.S. Madison on this week, and we're having Mo Hart on tonight. And it's just like a really good opportunity to sort of expand the conversation that we aren't having. And a lot of that came from Drag Race too. Someone's at my door. Hold on.
Sorry, it's all good.
It's probably a-
We're going with. Here we go.
I know exactly where I am. Don't worry. I know exactly where I am.
It's okay. It's a new section of Patreon of Something Podcast called Who's at the Door?
Who's at the Door? It's a Jan. No.
That's amazing. Yes. It's not. No, I don't think it is.
It's not Jam.
It's
another beautiful delivery woman with great hair.
Oh, she so really loved that.
but all of it, like what I was saying, is all of this came from, we went to the Drag Race finale. And I'm like, everyone's dressed to the nines and they're all praising and worshiping these queens. Like, this is church. Like, you know, we are a species that worships things. Like, you know, if you look at us, like, cavemen worship fire, and, you know, the Incas and like all these, you know, the Egyptians, we all worship things. So if you're not worshiping a higher power, what are you worshiping? I think that's really the conversation I want queer people to have, because I think the biggest lie that we've been told is that a higher power isn't for us. So it's tricked our community into worshiping other things. And I think that that needs to be focused on. Are we worshiping a pop star? Are we worshiping sex? Are we worshiping drugs? Are we worshiping fashion? Like, what are we worshiping? And it's like, if it's yoga, great. If it's meditation, great. I'm not saying Jesus is the only way. Like, I'm just saying, like, you know, I'm a Christian and an agnostic. Like, I follow the teachings of Christ, but I am agnostic in the way that I don't think I have the answer to every single thing. One answer. So it's like, you know, just like my acting technique, I studied Meisner, I studied Uta Hagen, I studied Stanislavski, and then I can like pull from those techniques the things that are applicable to my craft. I want to study religion and I want to pull the things that are applicable to my spirituality. I don't need any rule book. I have a relationship and a connection with a higher power. And I think that's the true thing to seek. That's the true level of enlightenment. And so that's what it is. I could talk about that for a whole nother hour, but I won't. But if anyone's interested, go to yashjesuspod.com or at yashjesuspod on Instagram or TikTok. Like, we're there. We will talk to you. You can leave messages. Like, it's the easiest way. Like, to, you know, listen to some of the episodes. I say start with the new ones and then go back to ones that you think you want to try, because we really found our way after the fourth season. Like, you know, in the beginning, it was a little bit like, what are we doing? But like, we're like in a place now where, you know, we've made like almost. Stop.
Yeah, we did exactly the same.
Yeah. And also, you know, we've collected over 200 prayers from drag queens around the world. And at the end of every episode, we end with a prayer and a prayer from a drag queen.
Wow.
So nice. For all the things that the world is saying about drag queens right now, I don't see any prayers for drag queens. So we have a bunch of drag queens giving prayers for everybody else.
Lovely.
Oh, amazing.
That's awesome.
Danny, honestly, this is just being such an insightful, funny, interesting conversation. I've loved every single
I hope it was worth the wait, because I definitely teach you guys for like a really long time. Like,
no, honestly, no. Honestly, this has meant a lot to me personally. So yeah, I appreciate you taking the time. And just keep doing what you're doing. And just, yeah, hopefully we can hang out at some point when you're next in the UK or something. Thank you so much.
If I don't get there sooner, which I really hope to get there, anyone in the UK that wants to hire me, I'm ready to do a play or come out there and do whatever. I love it over there. But if not, I will definitely be a drag queen next year. So con next year. So definitely, you know, come say hi for there for sure. Let me know.
100%.
We'd love that. Yeah. Thank you very much. You are a wonderful human. Thank you very much for this chat. It's going to be, I know it's going to be inspiring to a lot of listeners. And yeah, we really, really, really appreciate you very, very much. Please stay safe. And yeah, hopefully see you soon.
Thank you. Same to you. Appreciate you guys. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast! Hey! Woo! That was a very fun episode. Do you agree, James?
Oh, I'm sure it was.
Thank you very much, James. Over to James, who's still in Glasgow while we record this right now in Glasgow. But yes, what an absolute legend. I, like I said earlier, I wasn't sure how this was going to go.
I didn't know if he'd want to talk about Mean Girls, I didn't know what he'd gone on to do and how fucking class he is. We had a great time with Dan. Thank you very much again to him. And I hope I get to see him do comedy at some point in the flesh.
It was funny hearing him list off the names of people he's doing shows with and has worked with. Yeah. Your face just lit up, and listening back while editing, like, you could just see the amount of times you broke down laughing. So I think it was a really nice surprise conversation for you. And again, this is one of the favorite bits about doing this podcast is when, you know, as much as I love getting an insight into the music industry and speaking with bands, it's so nice when we get to speak to people a little bit outside the box.
Yeah.
People that listeners aren't expecting to see pop up when we post about it. And yeah, just see how all these worlds combined. And again, I got to give all the love and all the flowers to Danny for just taking the time and being so open and letting us do this. It's a surreal one for me. I didn't think we get to do it. So
yeah,
just happy days. And again, got to talk about a lot of things that we don't normally get to kind of get an insight into, especially religion, but different sexuality. But much love to everyone and everyone listening to this. Should point out what we are recording this bit in Glasgow as well, because we've just recorded something else in Glasgow. Something secret. And you can go and check out next week.
The Proclaimers.
What?
Spoiler alert. Proclaimers.
Oh.
I messaged Danny after we finished the podcast because I had such a good time. And I thanked him for coming on and told him how funny he was. And he replied, "Send my love to Jan." So my mother got a lot of love in this podcast. So thank you very much.
That's mad that Jan's now on his radar.
Yeah. So I sent that. I screenshotted it and I sent it to my mother. And I was like, "That's Daniel Francesi from Mean Girls." And she was like, "I'm famous now." That's not her voice, so I don't know why she did that voice. But no, great chat.
Yes.
Great guy. Good luck with everything going forward.
Yes. Again, we've got a very busy few days. Obviously, you and the Blackout have still got shows because you're touring.
Yep.
While we're this, we're going to be on the Emo's Not Dead cruise next week. So, ha-ha! Getting abducted. It's festival season, not too far away, which is scary, but let's not talk about that because we'll go into a crisis. Keep up to date with everything we got going on at Sapman Pod on Instagram and the app formerly known as Twitter, and please, for the love of God, go and support us. You're our Patreon. It's great, good laugh, like you get meet friends, gig, get memes, even fall in love.
We have a lot of suggestions and new upcoming bands suggested on the group, and we have all walks of life, from we've had big music producers, artists, and we've had loads of different types of people, and it's a fucking great way to meet your new best friend. So again, patreon.com/something, please join, because those people keep this podcast going. So if you've listened to more than four of these podcasts and you haven't joined up, you're a thieving bastard.
As always, we'd have to say a massive thank you to those people. And if you head to the description, there's loads of names there that we thank each and every week. But as always, Sean normally gives a shout out to the elite members. I know, I'm just trying to roll with it. But we can't access that right now, so I'm going to dub it in here. Very special thank you to Kylie Wheeler, Mayumi Luwe, Janelle Kasten, Paul Hirschfield, Scarlett Charlton, Dilly Grimwood, Tony Michael, Nathan Crawshaw, Mitch Perry, Liam Connolly, Molly Malloy and James Bowerbank, Amy Louise, Kat Besant, Alexandra Pembuchton, Jonathan Gutierrez, Kieran Lewis, Jenny Robinson, Amy Dawson, Murray Grimwood, Scott Jones, Stuart McNaught, Ellen Southfield, Caroline Robinson, Stephen Aston, Kate Puttock, Jenny Munster, Lewis Cook, Carl Pendlebury, James McNaught, Jason Heredia, John and Emma, Danny Eaton, Martina McManus, M. Evans Roberts, Evan, Sean Foynes, Ollie Amesbury, Emily Perry, Adam, King of the Goths, Parslow, Colleen Lekeen, Josh, a ghost walks into a bar. The bartender says, "Sorry, we don't serve spirits." Crisp, Vicky, Fraser Cummins, Laura Russell, hey, new member. Dan Peregrine, hey, new member. Pip, hey, new member. Carl Bounty Chocolate Van David Smith, And last, by no means least, Connor Lewins and family. Thank you to all those amazing people. We love you very, very much.
Yes, nice. List them off again.
No, I just realized if I don't the back in there, it'd be too long again.
Yeah, you'd have to copy and paste that across again, and it takes up more time. Funny though, isn't it?
Thank you very, very, very much for listening to this episode. Yes. Bob, do you have any final thoughts of your not scheduled appearance on this episode? Yep. Would you like to share them?
Oh, yeah. I had a Proclaimers joke earlier. Yeah, because you said that you came all the way up here to meet the Proclaimers. Well, I was going to say, you'd have thought they'd have come to you, which would have worked at the time. So if you go back in time, and everyone listen to this, because obviously now it doesn't sound like that witty, and I'm having to explain it, because they'd walk 500 miles, and they'd walk 500 more. That's the joke. That's all of the bits you need for the joke. I've given you all the tools of the joke now. So if you don't get it, it's entirely on you, right? Okay, so go back in time, right? Armed with this knowledge, and then when they say about Proclaimers, go, no, you thought the Proclaimers could have come to them. It's just an offhand like that. Imagine how good that would have been at the time. That's it, really, Mark.
Thank you. I like this.
Yeah, that's good. Should get Bob in every now and again, really. Anyway.
But yeah, it's been another great one, another one I never thought we got to do. We'll be back next Friday, and every week with very special guests. And next week's one was recorded right here in Glasgow, Scotland.
Sapnin'! I was going to make a Proclaimers joke again. Yay!
You're listening to Sapnin' Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.